Gavin's Den is Wrecking Ball Radio.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den, Filling the Void. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than getting a DWI in a cockpit. I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt. I'm joined by Joe Curry.
Hello.
Pip Helix.
Hi, everyone.
An actor, comedian, creator of the new short film, In the Name of Comedy, Brett Eidman. Hello, Brett.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you? Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Rouse
How is everybody tonight?
Rouse them up.
We're good. We're good.
Hey, you. Hey. Oh, hey.
Not right. On the show, some things that kids can't do anymore. Drunks in the news with some pilots that had a little bit too much to drink before they went to fly the old airplane. What are you going to do?
The old airplane.
The old airplane. Joe was unleashed on the public and has a new use stink. Will we be naming names this week in the use stink?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate. And spying Wi-Fi routers. But first, I want to do a little comics in the news. Excuse me, Jet. While Brett. Well, Jet. Stupid. I have to play the comics in the news.
Wasn't that John Travolta's son, Jet?
Yes.
It was.
Yeah.
I'm full of useless information.
I want you on my team on Trivial Pursuit night, then.
There you go.
Shh. I'm playing another one of Joe's great creations.
That's right.
And now it's time for Comics in the News.
Right. All right. Look at Joe pondering. What can I have done better with that? It's perfect.
I'm just thinking, I did two albums and an EP, and most of the stuff that gets airplay is this stuff.
You're welcome. As usual, I've done more for your career than anybody else. You're welcome. What do you want, royalties now?
Yeah, right.
Oh, don't get him thinking.
It's not about you. It's about Brett now. Brett in the studio. We're talking about In the Name of Comedy. Brett, how long have you been a performer?
About 25 years.
That's a long time.
Well, actually, longer than that. I started as a DJ at the age of 16.
Is DJ performing?
Sure.
Yes.
I've actually performed.
Oh, you were you like a dancing guy?
No, but I would stand around. I would dance a little bit, but not like at bar mitzvahs and stuff. You see all a series of dancers, but I would jump around a tambourine. I was dancing around. Yeah.
You're a DJ. You're an entertainer. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I always get mad. I don't know. I don't look at DJs the same as musicians and comedians. But if you're doing what Brett's doing, it's a little different.
It's in the entertainment realm.
I wore different kinds of hat, like Chuck Barris did on the Gong Show. I used to do some shtick between songs.
So now we're going with wardrobe changes.
Wardrobe changes, shtick, dancing around. So I was an entertainer.
I think that's a little different. I think you're taking it to the next level. But whereas, like, when I think of DJ, I just think of the guy playing
just
the
playing the music. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I was like an MC.
Because you're kind of on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
You're entertaining the crowd.
It is.
And you're directing the crowd. You're an entertainer.
Yeah, when you do your Santa Claus stuff, do you consider yourself an entertainer?
Absolutely. Sure. I'm directing a crowd. I'm running a show.
I've heard the way some of these stories turn out.
Yeah,
I'm not so convinced.
But still, you're running a show. You have a whole thing that you got, a whole agenda you got to go to.
You stay
in character. You're definitely entertaining. When you got a whole family singing Christmas carols and it's like a Norman Rockwell moment and you're running it, especially a prick like me, I'm sitting there going, boy.
Yeah.
It's just a lovely moment, and they're all singing the cat, and they're holding each other's hands, and it's a lovely. And I go, you don't know how much I hate Christmas. You shit your pants. Oops.
What are you doing?
Sorry.
What are you doing? All right. I got to edit you twice now.
Wow.
Just can we get a big beep? Kind
sorry
of
about that.
Noise.
Got all passionate about a Santa Claus gig.
Yeah.
Mighty, we'll move on.
Sorry about that.
he was like, ugh.
He was all fired up. he totally did not get the first, thanks, Joe.
Yeah, no.
He rolled right past that.
It's the first time I did that.
And then it was the second one, 10 seconds later.
Well, some consistent.
All right. Not about you. It's about Brett.
I got you. I'm sorry.
He's in here to promote his film In the Name of Comedy. So you've been at this 25 some odd, more than that. So with DJing, what, 30 years?
Yeah, more than that, too, because I'm 53.
No, I don't know. If you don't know, how we're supposed to know? You're looking at me.
He's looking around.
Before you come on, we need to see my ID.
63. So, okay. So that's 53, isn't it? Yeah, time flies. Yeah, so, yeah, I've been doing it, and I started DJing when I was 16.
So you've been at this a while. What does success mean to you? Because we all have definitions of success. For some, doing the show is success. For others, not so much. But we all have definitions of success, and I think it's different for each performer. So what does it mean to you?
It means being able to make a living in what you love to do. That's, I think, successful.
But you don't have a day job anymore.
Not anymore, no.
So are you doing just performing? Are you acting in the comedy?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm almost there.
So you're almost successful?
Almost successful.
Okay.
And I was very successful as a disc jockey, but I stopped doing that several years ago.
Okay.
I was very successful at that. I made a ton of money with that.
That wasn't what you wanted to do, though.
Right. I did it for 28, 29 years.
You want to be able to make a good living doing the acting and the comedy.
Correct.
So what's a good living? Like, is there like a number in your mind, or just like living a certain lifestyle? Because it's different for everybody.
$1.6 million, I think, would be good.
Okay, you're almost there.
Well, I don't want to make, you know, it doesn't have to be $30 million.
No, that would be gluttonous.
$1.6 million would be good.
Point six.
I just like that.
Okay.
I don't want to make like, you know, $2 million. That's a lot of money. 1.6, I think, is a nice number.
All right.
No, I just want to make a decent living. That's all.
I get you.
Yeah.
And
that's
for some people, it's getting on TV. Or it's getting a hamburger. I'm not, a
sitcom would be great.
That would be great. That's what I'm saying. There's all different levels. You know, or just being an extra in a movie. Or having their song played on the radio.
Right.
There's all different levels of success. It's different for every artist.
I just landed an agent, which I haven't had since I've been doing this. And the agent's now going to start sending me out on different stuff that pays really well.
For television. That's great.
Yeah, so commercials and possibly sitcoms. They have an office out in L.A. too. So we'll see how that goes. But that's where I'd like to be.
Okay. So you're not there yet. You're still on the path to success in your own mind.
Right.
Okay.
And I feel my window of opportunity is closing. Mm-hmm. So,
well, this show should pretty much shut it.
Shut it down.
Well, you know,
this is where it ends.
We're the same. Actually, I'm a year older than you, and I do feel that especially working at clubs, you know, now you feel this whole group of younger comics are coming up, and I feel that the ship has sailed for me in a lot of instances. However, there's no rules in this business,
right.
So there's always something that could keep you going, something that could keep you relevant, you know. So I know what you're saying, but still, you know, we still. Both, you know, I saw the thing, and we both still had that passion.
Right.
So, you know, it's still on.
Well, I still think, like, for films and for television and stuff, they need the wacky neighbor. I think they need the cop.
Yeah.
I think they need the father. They think they need the uncle, the fireman, you know,
yeah,
the coach.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely
you know,
right.
The drill sergeant.
Yeah.
You know, they need guys like that who are older.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so
absolutely.
That's
so this
what
still,
I'm
right,
banking
and it's still,
on.
Yeah, still
I'm waiting
for
corpse.
Commercials, too.
They still need a corpse.
That's me. That's my moment.
They need somebody for the Depends commercial. That's me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I can see you doing that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can crap myself.
I could be in Life Alert.
You just did.
Sorry. Yeah, you're not filthy like Joe.
Okay.
No,
I kept
this.
It clean.
Yes, you did. Thank you. Joe.
No, you didn't.
If only Joe would learn how to do radio, we'd be fine. Maybe one day you could be a success. So in your movie, you had a... several people talking because it's a documentary about you. Johnny Lampert and Lisa Lampanelli, they said that they think that part of the struggle you've encountered, because it's a long road you've been on, happened because you never like focused on just acting or just stand-up. You've always been one of these guys that did a little bit of everything. And they kind of tell us, especially if you're a comic, they kind of say, well, you can't just do comedy. You have to do acting, this, that, the other. But do you think being so scattered and not focused on one craft has hampered your path to success?
Well, they could be right. I don't know.
Well, what do you think?
Possibly. Because I wasn't just focused, because I love entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I love stand-up comedy. I love improv. I love sketch comedy. I do all that stuff. And I have been all over the place. And part of that is, like, you know, I've had ADD. You know, I definitely have ADD. So my attention span is terrible. So if I was more successful in the entertainment business, and then they could say, well, whatever I did was right. But all along, I've been trying to make opportunities happen. So something could have grabbed even 20 years ago.
So and if it, you had this ADD, though, say you get that break, are you going to be able just to focus on that break?
Yes.
So you think you could control it?
Yes.
Okay.
Like if they said, you know, okay, you know, you're working on a sitcom. Mm-hmm. Let's shut everything else out of your life. Fine. I would be okay. I'd love to be able to focus on one thing.
Yeah, but you know what? Somebody told me, you know, just be in the old days where the agents would come to the club
mm-hmm.
and see you and go, let's talk, have a thing. You have to go. That's gone. It's gone.
Right.
It's gone. You have to do is when you go see an agent that possibly you want to represent you, you have to go in with at least five projects that you have going. And it's
right.
the truth. At least five things that you can offer
industry,
them.
They already want you to have heat now.
Yeah.
They want you to already have something going on.
Yeah.
And they kind of want to... Get on that train and maybe take you to the next level. They're not taking you there.
They're not taking you there anymore. So you got
to
go to them.
That I just latched on to She was looking at my resume and stuff. I had a meeting and an audition. And she says, you know, oh, my God, you know, you're not working with anybody? Mm. And I said, no, I'm not working with anybody. She says, well, you have so much stuff on your resume. And then she revamped everything and stuff like that. But I think you're right. You have to have, like, everybody wants to jump on a success story.
Yeah.
You know, and they are there for you when you don't need them.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's that definitely exists, you know. So, you know, I don't know. I've just been doing the best that I can do.
Right. Well, that's what it is. When you don't have somebody guiding your career, that's kind of what we all do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people, they see these well-polished stars. But for a lot of people, before they're well-polished stars, they're kind of doing what Brett's doing, what we've done.
Yeah.
Kind of just trying to find your way.
Yeah.
So a lot of the focus in the name of comedy was on your viral video. And in the video, you portrayed an Asian huckster.
Mm-hmm.
And these were complete with the Asian-looking eyeglasses, which I know Joe still finds funny because when his pal does it on his radio show, Joe still laughs at it. So there's still an audience for it. But, you know, with the stereotypical Asian eyes. And you insulted an Asian couple at the stand-up at a comedy show. The boyfriend in the scenario attacked you. Now we all know it was a put-on.
Right.
But people thought it was real. And at the time, you did not let on that it was a put-on. What's the response you got from that? Because it's been a couple of years.
I didn't know what to do at the time.
I'm sorry, how many years ago was that?
4 years ago?
Yeah, something about it. Yeah, we were already doing the show. We were already doing the radio show.
Because when it happened, even Davin said, you know, can you come on the show and just tell everybody that it was fake?
And things were going better in his career, so he had options. So he said, no,
funny.
I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I put out another video afterwards saying that it was real and that I just made a poor choice.
Was that the one you did with Lisa Ann?
Yes.
Walter? Yes. Yeah. Then he did a put-on interview.
Oh.
He did a put-on interview.
So it was just
he
like
doubled down.
You know what it is? I had a friend.
But I remember talking to you about this, and I remember we were talking, and I'm like, I don't know, because even if I didn't know if it was real or a put-on at first, but I remember saying to you, I go, I don't know if this is something you want out there,
right?
Because it made him look really bad.
Yeah, you told me that. Yeah, you said, you know, are you sure you want this out there?
Yeah, because you know we've known each other a long time, and I didn't want bad things to come your way. I didn't know what bad things would be, but bad things did happen. What happened?
Well, I was, even at that time, I was still trying to get an agent. I was still trying to get a manager. I was trying to do this. And I had some meetings set up, and these meetings got canceled.
Oh, and so you had meetings set up before that?
I had meetings set up before that, and it was also in the process of even after the
meeting. So you actually had a little bit of heat going for you.
Yeah, I had some things lined up that all of a sudden got canceled, and nobody was telling me why they were getting canceled. Because if you Googled my name, the first thing that came up, racist comedian.
Oh, no.
Was this guy there was a lot of articles on it.
Oh, no.
And I even got blasted on comedy websites. Oh. Steve Hofstetter went AWOL on me, and I'm like, I said, I'm Steve.
Well, because he has his own videos, though, he likes to deal with.
So it's like, yeah, exactly. So I'm like, Steve, why are you doing that? Oh, I didn't do that. I mean, your name's right there.
It's a common name.
It just says Steve Hofstetter. Yeah, it must be his, you know, somebody that, by a third party, whatever.
But your mindset at the time was, this is going to help me. I'm going to go viral. That was the mindset at the time.
I was just hoping that it would get some attention.
Well, it got attention.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, boy.
I actually
didn't, but I saw the, you know, I saw the trailer thing, and I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah, and, but I didn't know, like, that it was going to be that. See, here's the deal. I look at myself as a decent guy. I don't lie to people. I don't steal. And I'm a nice guy. I don't want to hurt anybody. And I'm thinking that other people are going to perceive that, too, and see right through this stuff.
But
that they don't know me.
Well, here's a testament
all of a sudden
to you. The put-on was
worked.
So good that you look like such a jerk.
Right.
Because there's nothing lovable about you in that character. There's nothing lovable when you're wearing Asian eyes, which I think now...
Isn't that a Frank Sinatra song? No, it's Spanish eyes. I'm sorry.
I think now it's deemed offensive, but I think like 10 years ago... 15 years ago,
right.
It probably wasn't looked at that way.
No, because we've gotten so sensitive, and it's gotten to the point.
I don't know if it's right. sensitive. I just
no. It's no. It's you know, I do a bit. I do a bit about the context of words, and I use the word retort, the word faggot,
right.
And I and the N word, and I about the context on it, and my.
You're making the editing fun.
No, because there's a point to it. Because it's the context
the
of
point.
It's the context of the word, and I go over the hypocrisy of the context of the word. My buddy goes, well, funny bit, but I wouldn't put in your reel. And I'm like, why? Well, people do offensive. And I go, I do a whole preamble why it's not offensive. People don't care.
Yeah, but this video did not have that preamble.
Well,
yeah.
Here's the,
no.
When I first started doing the character, it was a parody of this late night guy.
Right, yeah,
work.
Yeah,
so
right.
All of a sudden, that's history. Now I'm just a guy.
Nobody remembers that.
Nobody remembers that. So there's no longer a parody. Now it's just a guy doing this character.
Right.
He must have invented this character.
Right.
Which his name is Dom Fock.
Yeah.
Right.
That you don't have to.
No.
That's okay?
No. Okay. And the thing is that you're saying that I thought that, you know, if people would see through and see that I'm a genuine nice person. But seeing that, like, in a vacuum, like, that's the first thing I would have seen of you. Oh, no, you don't shine through.
No.
You bad guy.
And that's the thing when you do characters. So, on the one hand, it's a credit to his ability to do characters.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's not really doing much for you as a human being.
Right.
Right.
And also, I mean, there was people commenting online that like, you know, well, his act was bombing, so he had to go pick on the Asian people. Like, but meanwhile, like, that was kind of ridiculous, like, that all of a sudden, I'm going to, like, on the spot, I'm going to have my glasses with me, and I'm going to have material and everything else that I'm not going to blast these Asian people because I'm mad because my act is not going well. Meanwhile, we taped that in the afternoon at AOH in Monroe.
Right, but you sold it as this happened at a comedy club.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So people are looking at it as this happened in a comedy club.
Yeah, and it was done well enough that I bought that.
It was when other angles started coming out. Because it was a multiple camera shoot, and all of a sudden there was other angles coming. But you didn't give that up right away. You played it very close.
I didn't know what to do because, like, if I said that it was fake, then maybe the people that believed that it was real were now going to be really mad because they had one over on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't want that either. Like, so I was like, well, what do I do? I don't want to, like, upset those people that you know. Oh, now I'm saying, ha-ha, you guys are all wrong.
And I think that would have been the better way to go.
Probably.
Because then you're kind of like Andy Kaufman as opposed to a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah. I didn't know what to do.
Then I think people would want to say, because these type of shows are very popular, people like you might get fans go, well, what's this guy going to do next? He fooled us with this one.
Mm-hmm.
How's he going to fool the next group of people?
Right.
But at the time, you know, that video went viral. How many hits did it get on YouTube?
Oh, it was millions.
Did you ever monetize that? You should have.
No, because I didn't want it to make it look like, I wanted it to look like somebody just threw it. I used a fictitious name to put it online. And then LiveLeaks got a hold of it, and it's like, that's when it went nuts.
Wow.
Yeah, so I used, like, you know, this guy who was like an activities director up in the Catskills.
Poor guy.
Like something. Yeah, Larry Strickler was his name. I put that, my name is Larry Strickler. I uploaded a video, you know, and so my name wasn't associated with it. But I took down my version of it, and it's still like I don't know how many, there's so many of them online.
You didn't take it down right away.
No, I didn't. I took it down, I don't know, not that long ago.
Yeah, and that's several years ago. But the goal was to get your name out there.
Right. Well,
and it did get your name out there.
Right,
so
in a negative light, sure.
Was it a success, or is it something you wish you hadn't done?
Oh, so I wish that I didn't do it.
Okay, so it was not success.
Now I'm trying to take this big-time negative and turn it into a positive.
With the movie. In the name of
telling
comedy.
Telling the story and saying, you know, and also getting some people that I mean, like everything else, you have to edit like crazy with these films. We had like 6 hours of footage. I mean, Lisa really was ripping me apart. We was
Lisa
like,
Lampanella.
Yeah.
She was ripping me apart. The same with Johnny Lampert. There's stuff we had to edit out because it was just like a roast. You know?
That's funny. Well, that's what Lisa does. You know?
We get it. I'm horrible. Stop it. Cut.
Yeah. You know, like Johnny Lampert's going to me like, well, let me tell you something. He's like, if Lorne Michaels gave you a shot on Saturday Night Live, you really think that you could stay on that show and be? I said, yeah. He says, really? No, really. You really think you can? I said, yes, Johnny, I do. I don't know about that. Like, it was back.
Now
and
it
forth.
Turns into the green room. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, so I'm trying to turn this big time negative into a positive, and hopefully the film could shed some light on it. I mean, my wife is, you know, you know, is you know, saying some nice things about me. My mom is saying nice things about us.
Well, there's a camera in front of him.
She didn't want it. My wife did not want to be in the movie at all.
And well, she saw your last production. She was a little concerned.
But she comes off well.
She does come off
well. She's great. Yeah, she's a wonderful person.
Nice
lady. But
do you think like the motivation to do your Tom Vu impersonation, do you think that comes from a place of just being ignored in the entertainment industry like so many people are? And just like a desperation, like where you weren't even thinking in your right mind, but you're like, you know, I got to do something to get attention. Was it like the business?
No. I just saw his character and I said, here's another thing I can do in my act.
Okay.
And then I started to do it.
No, I'm talking about putting the video out there. Character.
The character, because I mean, Gaffigan and Lampinelli, they loved it when I first started doing it. They were
but
that's a great character.
Ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great character. And I said, well, this is the kind of thing that probably can get you noticed because it's a lot of fun. You're improvising with the audience and you're really into the character. Like, this is a good piece for you.
So it seems like you
did it. Lost steam because of the not being a parody anymore.
Well, and also, right. I think times change.
Times change.
You know, what people find funny changes. No, I meant that video.
Oh, the video.
The put on.
Right.
Was that come from a place where, you know what? I've been doing this X amount of years. I'm unknown. I'm frustrated. I just need to do something to get my name out there.
I don't think it was like an act of desperation. I think it was just something to do that, let's give this a whirl. Because when I was thinking about it, I was like laughing to myself.
Okay.
When I was visualizing, like,
you thought everybody was going to be in on the joke.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I'm saying, like, what idiot, what person in his right mind would go up there with glasses on and make fun of the Asian people sitting right in front of the, like, and then the guy hits him. So I figured, and I'm the victim, so then, because I'm making fun of him, I'm the victim, so everybody should laugh.
So you thought
I got what I deserve.
You thought it was going to go viral because you thought it was a great sketch, not because it was a comic being attacked.
I thought it was a great sketch. I just know that I was laughing, like just thinking about the idea, like before I was doing it.
Because you
were
really excited about this at the time. I mean, I remember talking. You were like, you thought this was going to be a good thing, and there was people in your ear encouraging you. You didn't make this decision on your own. I mean, you ultimately made the final decision, but there was people who obviously didn't tell you don't do it. Obviously, everybody who was in on the joke.
Yeah, they had no problem with it.
Yeah, exactly. So you didn't.
Wasn't their ass on the line?
Right, no, but there wasn't a vacuum where like everybody's telling you don't do this, and you're like, right. I know best. There were people who thought this would be a good thing for you.
Yeah.
Well, look at how Borat was this character that would be so obnoxious and would go and say horrible things to people under the guise of just, oh, I'm just a dumb foreigner. And that went huge.
Yeah.
Now, it's a different scenario because he's not in a comedy club, like, insulting the people in the front row. But, I mean, I can kind of see where you're going. Here's this obnoxious character that went huge. And so, in a different scenario, you could have somehow made that happen.
It's just a shame that the industry took it as you were a racist guy.
Yes.
That like the industry.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, the industry didn't get the joke and the industry doesn't want to hear your explanation. That's just the industry.
Yeah.
But when you take a guy who's not known like me and all of a sudden,
well, now this, you are. Everybody's hearing this.
Well, you know, when you and then this is how they're coming to know you, they're like, "Whoa." I mean, with
it's hard to become lovable after that.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to go from we hate this guy automatically to we're going to root for him.
Right.
And another thing that I didn't do that wasn't that bright was that we taped that thing about four times. And the first couple of takes that we did, the Asian couple, George and Rachel, were laughing.
Oh.
And I said, you got to stop laughing because you're insulted by me.
Yeah.
Rachel's a good actress.
Yeah.
She was really peeved.
Yeah. Well, she also wouldn't talk to me after it went viral. She never didn't return my calls or emails anymore.
Why?
Because she didn't realize that this is now turning into a whole racist bit. And she felt that maybe I took advantage of her. And the guy George, even though George was fine with everything,
that she somehow enabled you to create this racist
thing? She said like I kind of pulled one over on her not that this is a racist.
That's lame.
That's a racist
really
bit.
Lame.
Look, this caught everybody by surprise. You know what I'm saying? The way it came off and everything. So you, as well as her, are a little surprised on the way things went with
it. Yeah, but I just like, you know, and she was such a sweetheart, and I was like, wanted to talk to her and say no. That wasn't. At first, she was so into it. Mm. She was laughing and carrying on, and then her friends called her up and say, by the way, on Ebaum's World, we're on the front page, and your picture is on the front page of Ebaum's World. And she was like really psyched because all her friends were recognizing her from this video.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it became this whole racist thing. And then now she's like, now I don't like it anymore. I was part of a bit that became known as a racist bit. Mm.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit too much exposure for her.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get away from that video, unless you guys have any more questions about that.
I want to just say one more thing about the with the video with those two laughing, and I told him, I said, you got to stop.
George, by the way, is in the name of comedy.
And I've kept in touch with him over the last couple of years. So I told him, I got to stop laughing. And so I wouldn't screw things up, I deleted those takes.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't upload the wrong one.
Right.
Right.
That would screw the whole plan up.
Oh.
And I got rid of them. And then there was another guy who was taping it. I said, we have to start and end exactly at the same time where people are going to, you know. So we both uploaded two different versions. One's a little closer. Ryan Dalton, another comedian, he had one camera. And then my friend Tom Gardner was holding another camera. So we made sure each came in and were out at the same time. And I deleted those other tracks. And I could have easily have said to everybody, this was a put on. Watch these guys laugh.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I would have been home free.
Mm. Right.
I did not save those outtakes, which would have been cool to have.
Yeah, but I still think at the time you thought it was going to be a big leg up for you. So why would you put that there?
Well, I didn't know how big it was going to go, because you never know. I mean, I put videos up online, I get three hits.
No, mm-hmm. I just remember you being particularly excited about this. I remember you being particularly excited about this than when we were talking. Because I remember walking, I might have talked about Walt about it. I'm like, I don't know if he's doing the right thing. Because Walt's a mutual friend of ours.
Right.
But you were excited about this.
I was, because I thought that, you know, that's all it would take is get, you know, if I'm getting millions of hits, that all it would take is like one person of any kind of power or clout.
Well, that's kind of what the entertainment industry wants you to think.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you just have this, then we're going to pay. Unfortunately, it doesn't work out that way. All right, I want to move away from that. So you're on this long journey, which a lot of performers are that are completely unknown.
Right.
And what people don't think about is, the performer's doing what he wants to do or she wants to do with their life. But what's the family's reaction to this? Because it's not – I always say it's really hard to date a military family, a military spouse, a police spouse, or an entertainer's spouse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What's your family's been reaction to your journey? Are they supportive? Have they had enough of it? Because it's been a long journey, and you have a goal that maybe they think is or is not realistic.
My parents were totally supportive, you know, and my mom's still around. They were totally supportive. My brother and sister were supportive up until maybe a couple of years ago. They stopped being supportive.
Why? What happened?
We had a fallout.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't the entertainment thing. They just stopped. They're just not involved with your life anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's very sad. A very sad thing.
Right.
Because I did not want that. My mom is still very supportive. My wife is supportive. But I've never, you know, and my kids are, you know, they're older. They got jobs. They're fine.
So you've never had, can't you get a real job or
no,
from the kids, you're embarrassed against whatever it is?
No, because I've always found a way to make money, and I never had to say no to my kids.
Okay.
So I never, like, hey, kids, you're not eating tonight because I didn't get a gig this week.
Yeah.
I always had.
You're not eating because you disappoint me.
Yeah. No, so I never did that. They never needed for anything.
Okay.
And so I always made sure that I either had a full-time job that was paying me decent money, or I had other types of work, even the DJ business or whatever, that I always had money coming in, and I didn't have to, the electric got turned off. And
yeah, I'm a starving artist, and you all have to starve along with me.
Yeah, the open mics don't pay much.
What was their reaction when you were in the middle of this video situation? Because you were getting a lot of hate.
My wife was upset about it.
Was she upset that they were speaking this way of her husband?
Yes.
Okay.
And also, she has a job where, you know, she's a school teacher, and she did not want you know, the association's not that good.
You know, in this day and age, that was like 4 years ago. In this day and age, you never, it could probably get her fired. Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. Was she concerned that she might be?
Sure. Or somebody would see it and then make a stink somewhere or whatever, you know. Yeah, that was, and
that's
also,
a valid concern.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, that would made her nervous. And also made her nervous that I was getting threatened.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, I was getting emails, I was getting phone calls, and, you know, that's a little unsettling.
Yeah.
What was a joke became kind of like a
thing, an issue, a problem.
And
yeah.
Say like, this is not, you know, like when my brother called me up and a few days after the video came out and says, oh, by the way, you're on the front page of Gawker. And I didn't even know what Gawker was.
No, mm-hmm. Boy.
He said, what's Gawker? And he says, that's like the biggest thing on the internet. And I said, oh, really cool. And I was all excited.
So this is going to be good.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Worked out well for my friend.
Yeah, there you go. So I went to Gawker. You know, I got on a computer and I went to Gawker. And I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And they took pictures from my Facebook. And like, I mean, they took a whole bunch of pictures and wrote this whole big article.
Those weren't going to be nice.
Yeah.
You know, and because I did put the glasses on and I went on top of a yacht. You know, like all these get-rich-quick
schemes. Right.
Helicopter.
Yeah. The chicks, yacht, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, so I went on this yacht. I said, because I asked the guy who owned the yacht, you mind if I take some pictures? Yeah, go ahead. So I took some pictures of the yacht.
That's
so
funny,
you know, they
actually
took all these pictures, you know, and then all of a sudden they're on Gawker.
Oh,
so they went into my Twitter account. They went to Facebook. They could have whatever.
That's
they
why
want.
You got to lock it down, people.
Lock down your social media.
Yeah. Be careful what you tweet. Yes.
Yeah. So my wife was more. My kids were doing their own thing. They were, you know,
they weren't embarrassed by it. Like,
no,
that's good.
No,
they were teens at the time, right?
In their 20s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if
they were younger, it might have been a little different.
I'm not even sure if they even saw the video.
It's funny.
One day somebody's going to want to marry them, and then they look at, I can't. Look at what you're
doing. Is this your dad?
You just give him the
is that
Asian,
your dad the racist?
Asian eyes as a wedding gift.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
I didn't know your dad's a racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's giving me away.
May all your grandchildren have glasses with Asian eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
So
great wedding toast.
Yes, it is. What is the message behind In the Name of Comedy?
I don't know if there's a message. There's more of this is what can happen when you're trying to get attention. When you're trying to,
I think that is a message.
All right, there's the message.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's
glad
the
we
message.
Could do
this is what can happen. You can get attention in a positive way or a negative way. You know, Mark David Chapman, he's famous too. But you don't know what the repercussions are going to be for your actions.
Yeah,
I had no clue. I thought people would see this and know that, you know, this guy's a joke, you know, or that was funny, or that was wacky, or whatever. But I didn't think, like, oh my god, you know, we should attack him.
Yeah,
you didn't want to see the internet for vigilantism.
Yeah, and I also
you.
Didn't understand why didn't people attack the guy who hit me. Like, say I'm verbally abusive to him.
Right.
And this guy physically attacks me, and nobody says, well, you know, the comedian was terrible, or he was, verbally.
I think because there was a girl involved. Because you shifted from just being in his face
right,
to going into the girl's face. And she looked very nice.
That's a very that's a very good point. Yeah, because I noticed that too.
My name's on the show.
But it was a very good point, because basically when you went to her, it was kind of like he was defending her.
Right. And every guy fancies himself doing that for their lady.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you were just riffing on him, people go, you know, the guy can't do that. But he's kind of defending her.
Well, no, I think it would have been more split if it was just the guy. Some people would have said Brett had it coming, but other people, the guy can't take a joke. But once you turn to the woman and make it uncomfortable for their whole dating scenario, and you're kind of creepy to the girl, it comes to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Now it's chivalry, dude. Now you have it coming. Now I don't think. I don't think violence is the answer,
right,
but
no.
I think that was the justification in people's heads.
Yeah, you see, you should have workshopped with us before you did that.
I tried.
We had this conversation when everything
would
be fine.
I had a
workshop.
You'd be right out of pilot season, right?
I got to check the message. I probably still have the message.
The next time I'm racist bit, I'm workshopping it right
this
here.
This is the place. This is the place.
What do you think we do here?
Trust me, I tried. I'm sure if I go back far enough, I still have the chats between
That's
us on
funny.
Facebook. I tried. you're like, oh, I don't like this.
I just like some of the comments were like, I wish the guy hit him sooner.
Oh my God. That is a critic.
I thought that was great.
Oh, that's funny.
Hit him sooner.
Yeah, well, you know what would have been really racist? How come the guy didn't use karate on him?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. When I got this guy, I put an ad on Craigslist looking for an Asian fellow who knows martial arts. And he said, so if you really study the video, the guy doesn't even make contact. It's kind of like,
no.
I'm just like, oh.
Look real enough for me. Yeah. I bought it.
So yeah, anyway, and the girl was like, kind of like an afterthought. I was really just going to use the guy. Then I'm thinking, oh,
no, she's what brought it home. She brought it to the next level.
Yeah, that's the real racism.
Yeah.
Rachel, if you're listening, call Brett. He misses you.
And I'm sorry.
It's all good.
He apologizes. So,
but,
it was... In the name of comedy, it's getting attention from various film festivals.
Yeah.
Where can people see the film?
This Saturday, September 10th at 10 a.m. Imagine going to see a movie at 10 a.m.
For you, I would.
Mm. Yeah, all right. Well, you can come. I'll buy you a ticket. It's at the Northeast Film Festival, which is in Teaneck, New Jersey, at 10 a.m.
I know it well.
Do you really? What,
my
you know Teaneck?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There
Not
you go.
Not your film. Oh. I mean, I know your film, but but I've known Teaneck longer.
Thank you. So that's one, and also in another film festival down in North Carolina, Kukulora's Film Festival, a Canadian film festival said they're going to have us in. I've gotten, so we're just getting rolling.
So so in the end, this viral video which damaged your career might take you to the next level.
To from your mouth to God's ears, as they say,
yes.
If there is a God.
this is why you get attacked by Asian
now
people.
The religious right is going to be all over
I'm
going to
get
butt.
Another nasty letter.
So that's I'm hoping to go a whole
is
bunch
it going
to
be available questions. Online at some point?
At some point, yeah. I think we're going to make it available like on iTunes and Amazon, whatever. And
great.
You know, what's I you know, I guess
as long as you're focused.
Excuse me.
In the name of comedy, Brett's going to hang out with us. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Davin's Den. We're back. You're listening to Davin's Den. Of course, Brett Eibman going to hang out with us for the duration of the show. Mm. So, everybody, this week was the first week of school in a lot of places.
Yes.
Yeah.
As we like to revisit how school has changed since we were all in school. Every year, it's further and further away since we were in school. Funny how that
happens. So many years.
Yes.
So, one of the things that kids don't do in school that we did was write lines on the board as punishment. Remember, like, I must not run in the halls. I must not... Pull somebody's hair. I must not chew gum.
Detention supersedes all other commitments. Had to write that 150 times in detention.
Wait, what?
Detention supersedes all other commitments.
What grade were you in where they give you supersedes?
Oh, yeah. That was in 7th grade, 8th grade, 10th grade, 12th
grade. Detention.
Detention supersedes all other commitments, and you would have to sit there in detention and write it.
That's after school.
Yeah.
I will not talk in class. I will not talk in class. And now look what I'm doing. Yeah.
Can't shut you up.
Right now.
Wasn't your punishment banging erasers? Wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
But I think that comes. They don't do that anymore either. I think that
no.
comes. They
it's a smart board. It's
yes.
called a smart board.
Yes, I think that's why you don't have the writing. I bet there's still kids at their desk writing. Although
there
my daughter, I don't think my daughter's ever gotten that assignment. Now they give little like sheets. Like you get like a certain amount of like you start on green, but then you go to yellow if you get in trouble once, and then red. And I think they also give like a little pink notices, but they don't have them writing. Yeah. Writing was a deterrent.
That's like a terrorist alert.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a yes. chatty terrorist alert. But I think the writing was a good punishment.
It was
it
a
was.
Great punishment. And it's funny, my wife's friends, we were over the house years ago, and the son, they had the little boy, about 7 years old, being disruptive, and the father told him, you're going to go upstairs, I want 5 paragraphs of why you were bad and what you're going to do to be better. That is the greatest punishment because who wants to do that again?
I think they still have that. I think they still have the kids writing what they did wrong.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
Is it? Not if you're a kid.
Almost the worst. Almost worse.
Here's what I did wrong. I got caught.
Well, we're adults now.
Look away, Miss Nelson. Look away. This wasn't for your eyes.
Almost worse, Mrs. Ehrenfeld did not like messy chalkboard work, so you had to take this thing that was basically like a menorah of chalk and draw
that.
The lines across.
Oh, yeah,
and you
yeah.
You never do that without making squeaky.
It was the Freddy Krueger chalk hand.
Yes! Yes!
That's the best explanation
and
of it,
made
yeah.
the worst noise. Oh. You'd have to like draw the lines and then write within the lines. Oh, it was torture.
I had to write a lot on paper. I must not would do whatever. That happened a lot in elementary school.
Yeah. I must not do whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
And I turned out to do a lot of whatever for a living.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I didn't have to write it on a chalkboard. You have to write on chalkboard.
No. I couldn't write. So that would have been
what, your sign language, how bad you were?
No, I was just a really bad writer.
He just had to rock back and forth and chant.
Yeah. It's a bunch of punks with him.
I will be on time to school. I will not cut math.
That would be a really funny album, like Gregorian chant, yeah. Like things that like punishments.
Yeah.
I should do that. That would actually be pretty funny.
No yes. Chewing gum in class.
No.
Yeah. Get some like background people to chant with you. That would be really.
I'll
good.
Have my cell phone off.
If you can attack an Asian couple while doing it, I think it might go viral.
Sign me up.
Sign him up.
Never learns his lesson.
Need a sequel.
I know a chick named Rachel is looking for some work.
It's funny.
Climbing trees. They don't let the kids climb trees.
What?
Don't yell at me. I don't make the rules.
They climb trees. They won't let them climb trees. It's basic nature. Being a child is climbing a tree.
Yeah, but not in school because they're insurance.
No, I think it's because they don't want the males to have erections.
Yeah.
Climbing trees?
Yeah, that was an example in the sex ed books when you were in elementary school. They said, you know, sometimes a boy will experience his first erection by climbing a tree. So everybody was like, I got to go out and climb a tree.
Mm. Yeah, because bark does it for you?
Depending
I've never
on the type
heard
of bark.
That.
Yeah, no, climbing a tree. You could.
Are you particular to any type of tree?
I don't know.
Brett,
I didn't. I only. I
just
wasn't a good tree.
Like
I wasn't a
rubbing?
Good tree climber.
Is it like
it's
the rubbing?
Probably the rubbing.
Can you imagine you just come back to class, got all sap in your lap?
Yeah. So you fell
that's
in,
not sap.
Because you fell in love with an elm.
Well, it is fall. Did you see its foliage, Joe? It's lovely.
I also use the example of using a rope in gym class.
Oh, yeah.
That was another one.
Especially when you would go up there and the guy that would slide, I watched the guy go, ah! He slid right down the rope, burnt himself.
And that's what gave you an erection?
No, I'm just saying. It's
the, I thought that. I thought his burnt thighs really did something for young Joker.
No.
Oh, they just had on an episode of Fear of the Walking Dead. This woman had to jump to get away from the Walking Dead. She had to jump into an elevator shaft and hold on to the cables and pull herself up. And I'm like, finally, the reason you had to climb the rope in gym.
Yeah,
finally,
a
legitimate reason.
Exactly.
I was excited.
More Davin's Den when we come back. We're back. Thank you for hanging out. You are listening to Davin's Den. Having a good time with you. Do a little drunks in the news as soon as I find the jingle. Then we'll do the drunks in the news.
Welcome to Drunks in the News.
As we like to start all of our Drunks in the News segments when we do it. A little Benjamin Franklin drinking term. Benjamin Franklin, one of our founding fathers.
Yeah, I love Benjamin Franklin.
Who doesn't? He was loved by many.
Yes.
Often.
Yes.
Came up with over 200 synonyms for getting drunk.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's quite prolific. So this week's, this week's will be, he's chap-fallen.
Chap-fallen?
He's chap-fallen.
What, like he chapped his lips on the curb because he
could
fell?
Be, or he could be referring to Little Benjamin, and maybe that's fallen because he's got the old whiskey, you know what?
Oh!
I don't know. I mean,
he's
could
a good chap. Like he's a fine chap? You mean that?
Could be that.
He's chap-fallen.
There's a lot of things. Joe's pondering.
Yeah.
I really can't figure where we got that from.
He's Benjamin Franklin. Who would have thought of flying a kite and discovering electricity? He does things.
I understand.
He's a brilliant man.
I understand.
Well, you can't understand his ways.
No, he was. And the ladies loved him, and he would get in a ship and go to across the Atlantic to look for French girls and stuff like that.
He used to de-virginize women. I think it was.
That's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. You either become a founding father or a suicide bomber.
Yeah.
That's how you de-virginize women. Those are the rules. I don't make them up. All right, so we had some... what?
I'm just thinking, you know, writer of all of these drunken terms and purveyor of social disease. Great guy.
Don't make it sound bad. So we have these airline pilots. They just want to fly their plane. Sure, there's passengers. Things might not have gone the way
they wanted.
Good evening. We begin tonight with a potential danger in the skies averted this weekend. Two United Airline pilots arrested Saturday morning on suspicion of being under the influence of alcohol. They were scheduled to fly 141 passengers from Glasgow, Scotland to Newark, New Jersey. It's not the first time this year pilots have been taken into custody for alleged intoxication. In this case, aviation experts say the system worked, but some passengers on that United flight were left shaken and frustrated. NBC's Morgan Radford has our report tonight.
Authorities say the two pilots are 35 and 45. Their identities still not confirmed. They were supposed to be flying United Flight 162, scheduled to leave Glasgow at 9 a.m. yesterday with 150 people on board. But then, confusion. One passenger tweeting, "What is going on? Police in the tunnel. Very little information." It turns out the pilots were arrested, suspected of being drunk.
If you are uncomfortable with a member of your crew, you don't fly with them. The safeguards that are in place did, in fact, work.
The entire crew was replaced, and the flight was delayed 10 hours, finally landing in Newark at 8:45 last night. Today, other passengers there voiced concern.
Yeah, two pilots getting on a plane drunk absolutely concerns me.
United Airlines said in a statement, the two pilots have been removed from service and their flying duties. We are cooperating with the authorities and will conduct our own investigation as well. This isn't the first time this has happened.
A flight to Philadelphia canceled and a local pilot charged.
In March, American Airlines pilot John McGuire failed two breathalyzer tests before takeoff and was arrested. He pleaded no contest and was put on probation. In April of last year, JetBlue pilot Dennis Murphy flew 151 passengers from Orlando to New York while allegedly under the influence. Just yesterday, a reminder of the great responsibility pilots have after an engine problem forced a Southwest flight to make an emergency landing in Florida. Passengers praised the pilots.
We're definitely grateful that we were so safe and watched over and we had good pilots.
As for the two pilots arrested this weekend, they're being held at a police station in Scotland. A long flight for those passengers finally arriving here in Newark. Meanwhile, those two pilots expected to appear in court tomorrow morning back in Glasgow. Kristen?
All right, Morgan Radford, thank you.
Thanks, Morgan. I'll handle this. Kristen's not here. So, have you guys, that's a big fear. That's a big fear, like, that your pilots aren't ready to do the job.
Let me tell you something. I get in a plane after delays, and TSA author could come on board and want to, let's go to Newark. Well, yeah, let's go, babe. Strap on in.
You don't mean that. You're I really... a nervous flyer. You don't want that. Nobody wants zigzags in the air. Yeah. It makes you queasy.
Oh, Jay Perry's wife. All right, we're going out.
I think it was terrible when they started getting on the intercom and announcing, if you look over on the left, you can see the Grand Canyon. They were still in Scotland.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear a last call from the co-pilot.
Yeah. And the awful thing was they were flying to Jersey.
Well, that's a good reason to be drunk.
Yeah.
That's clinking all those little glasses. Oh, excuse me.
Think you guys were ever with a drunk pilot?
I don't think so. I mean, our planes have been pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think so, but That's a really scary thought.
I do remember we landed on one flight, and over the intercom, whatever they used, one of the pilots just let out long. So I was like, "Oh,
really?"
Like an ecstasy sigh, like something was going on with one of the flight attendants. And I do remember like we all land. I do remember that happened.
Well, the other thing is, was he just like so relieved you landed? And what the heck did you not hear about was going on?
No, it sounded like something really good happened in the very small section of the plane.
Did you hear a zipper?
No. If I would have known, I would have listened for it.
That's funny.
That's pretty funny.
I think what's not a bad idea is, you know how like someone for alcoholics, they have like the breathalyzer.
Sure.
I think we should have those on planes.
Absolutely.
For the pilots.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could do that.
And surgeons. Yeah.
I like a little creativity in my open heart surgery.
No, thank you.
All right. Well,
imagine if you like you went into the cockpit and you saw all those like 600 of those little bottles.
Yeah, really.
That's a good practical
joke.
In
the airplanes.
Yes. That'd
be a hilarious practical joke. You just open up, you're bored.
The cockpit and
like Jack Daniels.
All
right, well, you're probably going to want to drink.
Do they have those anymore, those little tiny little scotch?
I think they do.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen those little tiny bottles.
All right, settle down, Gulliver. I got to go to break. You're listening to Davin's Den. Joe's got a stink when we come back. back, Joe, once again, went out to the public. Always a good chance that when Joe goes out into the public, bad things will happen to Joe.
Yes.
And then Joe will complain about them.
Yes.
Fortunately, we have a forum for that.
Yes.
Joe knew we were going to have a forum for it, so he even devised a little bumper for it. So here it is, Joe. You stink.
You stink.
So what stinks this week, Joe?
What stinks this week is...
This just in. What stinks this week?
I had to do a whole bunch of banking last week. And I get to the first bank I had to go to, and usually it's a mob scene in there, but it was nice and clear. I went in. I was able to do my banking. I was able to get in. I was able to get out. I go to the next bank, and I have about 20 minutes left in the day program, okay? 20 minutes of lunch left in the day program. I figure it will take me about 5 minutes to get into the bank, do what I need to do, and the day program...
All right, right there. Going to the bank on lunch is the worst thing because everybody's thinking just like you. That's the problem. And they don't have enough tellers. They don't have enough tellers there.
They're on lunch.
Yes. Which they should not be allowed to do.
Exactly. Now, I go into that bank. I walk in, and there is one teller, but one person online.
Okay.
I get
looking
all my
good.
Stuff done. Right. So
you feel good about yourself.
You're feeling good. So, okay, this shouldn't take that long.
It shouldn't.
Right.
Unless somebody's going to do their home mortgage in front of you.
Exactly. Apparently, I found the person.
It's always that way.
It always is the person that's got, they got to write a check. This account isn't going.
This is almost like a curmudgeonly philosophy.
They want to trade in doubloons. You know, it's like,
do they still take doubloons at the bank?
Apparently, they do at mine.
They give you a toaster?
Yeah.
If you open an account?
Yeah. So you have the bank manager that comes out, and he sees that I've been waiting there, and he goes, I'm going to help you. And then disappears for about 2 minutes.
Well, he didn't say when.
Yeah.
Eventually.
So he comes back, and he goes, oh, I can help you now. Good. I got to get out of here. So I got two passbooks. Yes, I still have passbooks because I want my money as inconvenient as possible to get to.
Okay.
So I give him the passbook.
This is why we don't give you a lot of it.
But
take your time with
it. He's not missing it. He can't get at it.
So I give him the first passbook, and he's looking, and he's trying to do.
Is he trying to figure out what that is?
Yeah.
Is he like 13?
And would you like to make a contribution to your Christmas club too, Mr. Curry?
Yeah. Bah humbug. No.
And they don't do passbooks anymore in any of the banks, and you can't do any transactions online with a passbook.
Right. Well, I think you can't. No, actually, you can't. Yeah. So it makes it totally inconvenient. Yeah. However, it shouldn't take him long enough where he had to make the new additions like he was chiseling them into marble. How long could this take?
The passbooks confound them. They cannot handle the passbook.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just like, how long are you going to take doing this? And then he's got to take his time doing the other one. And it's like, it's a
now, is the other person still at the teller?
They're still,
the guy did help you. Because you'd still be on.
Still, it doesn't take. You're the bank manager. You should be more intuitive, and you should know what you're doing.
But how long do you think it would have taken the teller? The teller would. You would have had to wait online, and then the teller would have had to call the bank manager. Because there's no way the teller could do it.
No, I know the other teller. I deal with the other teller all the time. Oh. She's very good.
She's hip to your game.
She's been there for years. She knows me. She doesn't even need ID. You know, she's very, very.
She
good.
She remembers the teletype machine.
Yes. Yeah. But I was just subsequently, I got back to the day program late.
Oh.
Yeah.
But is that their fault or your fault for planning?
No, it's their fault because I planned and I gave myself enough time to get there where I would have been back to the day program in 10 minutes with time to spare.
But your time is not their time. So you said
I'm the customer.
but they didn't know you were showing up.
Yeah.
But they don't have their own time. Yeah. I mean, You thought that you had enough time, and you should have had enough time.
Yeah.
But not on air time.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. We got more show coming up. You're listening to Davin's Den. Yeah, organized as always. How's the activity?
Yeah, just on the activity on the internet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fans.
I thought you just looked at her and I thought, yeah.
I can't say what I was doing. I can't say.
I wish there was an Asian man to hit him. So Wi-Fi routers, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
They're here right now.
Right.
They can spy on you.
Yeah. How creepy is this?
Well, about as creepy as waking up and seeing Joe in your bushes. It's kind of creepy.
Why did you put me there? Well, I didn't sneak and look in anybody's bushes.
Why did I put you there? Because if you were just standing across the street, it'd be a little ostentatious. Why put you in the bushes? Yeah, I was giving you a little class.
Class.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I'm sitting in hedges.
You've sat in worse. You've left worse. You've sat in worse. You've done bad things. Anyway. So routers send signals in the air to gather information. They also adjust to find the quickest way to do so. So if they determine that an obstacle's in the way, say a person, a pillar, I didn't know this, they can recalibrate to figure out that there's something there.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. And it's helpful. It's good.
Yes, because it's more efficient.
Yes.
So as people move through a space with a Wi-Fi signal, their bodies affect it. We absorb some of them, and others we reflect in various directions. I don't know how that determines what's reflected and what's absorbed. But by analyzing the exact ways that a Wi-Fi signal is altered when a human moves through it, researchers can, quote, see when someone writes with their finger in the air, identify a particular person by the way they walk, even read a person's lips. They can do all this. In some cases, even if a router isn't in the same room as the person performing these actions.
So
just by reading the signals. The invisible signals.
Yeah, so you can have a router like in the next room and one in here, and if you pass in between the two of them, somebody in the next room, if they had this technology, could tell them who passed between the two.
Even if there's not a router in here. They're saying just if there's a router in there sending out signals because it's a Wi-Fi router.
Right, but it has to bounce off of the other router, like they ping off of each other.
Right, but it doesn't have to be in the next room. It could be, you know.
Anywhere.
It could be in a tower.
Yeah, well, you know how they triangulate cell tower transmission, you know, cell phone transmissions, and that's how on all the cop shows they figure out where somebody was at the time that the killing happened?
That's how I get all my tech info.
Well, it's kind of sounding like that they can use this to figure out where people were and who was there, what they were saying.
Yeah, by reading the lips.
Yeah.
So experiments have focused on using Wi-Fi signals to identify people either based on their body shape or the specific way they move.
I resemble that.
Okay. A group of computer science researchers at Northwestern Polytechnical University in a detailed system that can accurately identify humans as they walk through a door 9 times out of 10.
Wow.
A similar system was demonstrated with 93% accuracy by a British and Australian group. A pair of MIT researchers wrote in 2013 that they could use a router to detect the number of humans in a room and identify some basic arm gestures, even through a wall. They could tell how many people were in the room from behind a solid wooden door, a 6-inch hollow wall supported by steel beams, or an 8-inch concrete wall, and detect messages drawn in the air from a distance of 5 meters with 100% accuracy.
Wow.
That's great.
You're happy?
I'm happy with that. Because if there's a hostage situation, they know what's going on. Or if there's a fire, they want to know how many people are in the house.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
That is a good point.
Yeah, but you're being optimistic. I mean, I'm sure that's going
to
be the excuse.
Can you tell what race the person is?
I'm sure that's going to be, we're trying to save lives.
That's important. That's I'm not funny. Going in there. Look at the Wi-Fi router. Yeah.
Well, hold on a second. Is it at waist level? Oh, I just had to ask.
He's grabbing his crotch. He's either African-American or Italian.
But
hold on.
I like the way he said, I'm sure that's going to be the excuse. Oh, to save lives. Sorry, there's an angle to this.
But you know, it's going to get in the wrong hands because they say this stuff is...
Well, yeah, everything does. You know,
like these microphones.
Everything.
Yeah. But this stuff is easily hackable.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they're going to... And you don't think the government would use it against us?
Absolutely. They're using it now. If this is available, it's being used right now. Right. You know, if... it right here.
Could be.
There's four people in this room.
And they can tell what you just said. Stop signaling with your finger.
We're on the radio. Everybody can tell what we just said.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Now, if you notice, I'm signaling Pip with my finger.
It's going to look like a baseball game when they go out to the mound and they cover their...
mouths? Yeah.
That would be great. A new way to steal signals from, like, the other teams.
Yeah.
What's your Wi-Fi router doing in center field?
Yeah, right.
Does he got a video? No, it's a modem.
It's a modem.
Yeah.
So a system called YKey presented in a conference call in a conference last year can tell what keys a user was pressing on a keyboard by monitoring minute finger movements. So they could see what you're writing.
I can't believe it's this accurate.
Once trained, YKey could recognize a sentence as it was typed with 93.5% accuracy, all using nothing but commercially available router and some custom code created by researchers.
93%?
93.5.
So it'd be kind of like Wheel of Fortune.
What do you mean? Oh, trying to figure out what the yeah, words
like
are.
Yeah.
They say as the Wi-Fi vision evolves, it may become more adaptable and need less training. And if hackers are able to gain access to it, which we said
we
they
know
probably
they can.
Will, you know, they can trick a user into connecting to a malicious router. He or she can then try to eavesdrop on what's being typed nearby without being anybody knowing it. So we know the Russians are hacking into the DNC.
Yes.
They're probably going to hack into some other stuff. We know North Korea hacked into Sony. You don't think that this could be used to, like, hack into the White House routers and say what the president's
doing? How are you going to stop something like that?
That's the problem with technology.
What? There's going to be hacker upon
but
hacker.
I don't,
that's what it always is.
Yeah, it just seems that something like that is going to be very tough to stop, you know?
That's the problem with this.
Yeah.
You can't stop it.
The implications are amazing.
That's the problem with technology.
Yes, yeah. It is. I mean, it's always any innovation. It can hinder, it can help, and it can hinder. And these are the ways they can really get us in trouble.
Once they figure out a way to... Oh, sorry. I was getting too comfortable. once they figure out a way to block out other people... Then it'll be somebody to learn to hack into that one, that system.
Right. Yeah. Brett mentioned all the good things that could come of this.
Right.
I feel less secure with this.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's almost like having a X-ray vision. You can see into a house and see what people are doing, who's there, what they're typing. I mean, if you had your next door neighbor was particularly handy, they could pick up everything that you type. If you buy online, well, they've got your credit card.
They're
going to
know what I think of their wife. Know that happened. All right, we got to wrap this puppy up. Brett, where can people see the movie or catch up with you?
In the Name of Comedy will be shown this Saturday, September 10th at 10 a.m. at the Northeast Film Festival in Teaneck, New Jersey. And also they can track me down online at either inthenameofcomedy.com or bretteidman.com, bretteidman.com.
Very good, Joe.
Thank you.
Friday the 16th, my band Rotgut will be reuniting for a show, also with the Clapton Chronicles and Hendrix Experience. So check that out, 89 North and Patchogue. You'll see it on my Facebook page, Joe Curry on Facebook.
Friday, September 16th and Saturday, September 17th, I'll be in Miami, Oklahoma at the Looney Saloon.
Nice.
For tickets, call 918-5... It's a casino. Settle down, Steve. 918-542-7884. 918-542-7884. As always, you can listen to the full show on davinsden.com. You can hear the full interview with Brett Eidman. Follow us on Twitter at davinsden and like us on Facebook, Davinsden. If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us,
tell no one.
Either way, please keep on listening.